How to do that, but fantastic.
What's happening?
You just activated recording.
That's okay. So you got this link where you click on and say, I agree.
I actually don't see the link. It's just I heard this
Oh no,
message.
not the link. You should get a button which says, I agree to recording.
Oh yeah, I do have it.
Okay,
Okay,
good.
now I agree to recording.
That's all I Yeah, good. So we're recording it so Maria and others have a link, but we might do it one more time, right? Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Oh, you look fresh, man.
Okay, I'm going to link the slides to the meeting, or actually, probably just download the PDF so that's immutable.
Hey, Maxime, can you hear me?
We can hear
I
you.
can. Yes.
Okay, very good.
Please.
Can we really finish this in half an hour?
That's the idea, really. It's point is it's unclear how much problems or issues or questions people will have. So it's just more economical to make it an iterative process. And I'm saving. Oh wait. Okay, of course. I'm just finishing the upload of the slides. All right, seems to have worked. So we are on the hour. Thomas, should we start?
Yeah, let me just do.
There are not too many of us. Actually, it's nine people. It's more than I was
That's
expecting.
okay. So let me just, welcome everyone. I think it's great that you could join. So as you know, website is progressing, and I think it's at a level where you, the, committee members have to kind of look at your pages, improve it, put down what you think should be, put there. The development is in the hands of Maxime, and he put it on GitHub. And I think the whole lesson here is now that, kind of everybody gets up to speed. And with that, I just hand it over to Maxime. Maxime, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'll share my screen. Let's see, desktop. Can you see my screen?
We can.
We can see it.
Super. Okay, so again, the idea is to keep it quick because everybody is very busy, and yet we need to make progress. So the goal is just to get everyone started. I realize that people have different levels of expertise when it comes to web development. So exactly, we'll have to adjust for that. And the process will be iterative, and there will be follow-up meetings as we progress. So we agree that Epic needs an efficient website. It will be and is already a considerable collaborative effort. We'll quickly review the technology that we use. and conventions and how we'll manage the workflow. And word of encouragement, everything that I'm going to talk about is not really difficult from the technical perspective. So simplicity of the long-term maintenance is one of the major concerns that we have, because obviously Epic is here for a long time, and we need to be economical when it comes to, you know, available effort to support it. This reduces the appeal of, you know, the some popular platforms, PHP-based, which actually EIC user group has experience with. When I was supporting Drupal for some years, it was a constant problem with version creep of both Drupal and PHP. So it was a non-trivial effort to just keep it afloat. Speaking of wikis, there was a security breach in the Athena wiki, which we had to rebuild. And also, again, it's prone to periodic PHP security issues and other concerns. So on the other hand, the high energy and nuclear physics community has positive experience with alternative. If you can look at the EIC user group website and also the HEP Software Foundation, that's has been very successful in their web presence. And so we picked the so-called static website generator technology, which means you create basically text written in the Markdown format, which is very human readable and easy to understand. And it gets translated by the Jekyll application into a static website. That brings about a few benefits. Security, because it's all but impossible to break because it's static HTML once deployed on the server. It is very fast because, once again, there is no database backend, so everything is getting served in milliseconds. And information protection, because we have a very good control of where we keep our source. Specifically on GitHub, there are multiple ways to ensure security of the materials. And again, from experience, it's just great for long-term maintenance. It really does require much human intervention to be running. So this is an example. I was developing a website for our EIC-related software project, and I just give you the top of the page. Again, everything that's on this page is very human-readable. We use an asterisk to mark list items. We use hash marks to signify the title. So it's pretty much easy to understand and compose. And when Jekyll does its work, this is what you see on the website, which is relatively good looking and modern looking website. So that's the idea behind what we're doing here. So the layout, and we can go into much in more detail later in our subsequent meetings, but essentially the whole approach is template based. Somebody designed a template for you, you're just using layout, you fill out the text and plots and pictures, and it gets rendered. Thomas has actually added links to very helpful manuals for the Markdown syntax. If you're not familiar with it, it's very easy to get started. Many of you are familiar with it by using README format on GitHub. It's the same exact Markdown syntax. And so once you know, editing your page, for example, it's very helpful if you just run this Jekyll application locally on your laptop or workstation to validate and see that the website comes out the way you intended. But once you push it to GitHub, GitHub does all the magic for you, and we're leveraging this free service that they provide, which is hosting, right? So this is the link on the bottom of this page is exactly where we hosted the development version of the website. We never deployed in production, but that's where we're going to get our work done. So again, we're making use of the useful features of GitHub. So Jekyll is just an application. There is a link here. It can be installed, as you can see, in the right panel on a variety of platforms. It may require a tiny bit of effort, but I've never in encountered anything drastic. It's all doable and well documented. By the time you're done with installation, what you do is you go to the folder where you keep the website source, and then just run this command. And you can specify any port that you want to use. And then you open your browser pointing to this local host, for example. And this is your local sort of copy of the website that you can keep developing and rendering and making sure that it works as you would like it to look, right? So what I wanted to show in this page is how our particular website is designed in terms of its underlying files and materials. The menu on top was essentially designed by Thomas, and that's a screenshot essentially. This title, the top navigation bar on the current version of the website. What I did do is in the lower left corner of the slide, if you will, you can see that I'm mapping the drop-down menu items to individual folders that make it somewhat easier to find the content you're looking for. If you assign a particular page in a particular section, that makes it easy for you. It also minimizes the chance of clashes when you push the content to GitHub. And so again, this is a screenshot of our repository on GitHub. Everyone in this website mailing list has been added as a member of this particular repo. So you have edit rights and you can do essentially development in this environment. What I'm trying to actually convey is the best way to manage when there is more than two people working or even one is to again to leverage the feature of Git, which is the branches. If you're working on a particular page, it is very helpful and in fact encouraged to create a branch in GitHub. And if it's the first time you're doing that, it's not a big deal to learn. It'll take you a few minutes. And since this is what we use in the EIC software, getting familiar with GitHub essentially is a prerequisite for being productive in EIC. So it's not an extra burden on anyone. So you create a branch. You do your edits, you validate them, and then you create a pull request, which someone of us will approve, you know, making sure that everything works. It's your actual typical software workflow. We're not doing anything different or fancy here. This is, again, just to illustrate that, for example, myself and Thomas have branches. These can be deleted at will. It's a good practice to delete a branch after it's been merged into the main and becomes, you know, part of the main body of code. And so just to summarize the workflow in this environment, again, every one of you has access rights to this repository. You're encouraged to create a branch of your repo, and it's a good idea to include your GitHub ID into the name so that we can easily find who's doing what and communicate. Then you clone the repo on your machine, check out your branch, like Git checkout Thomas, for example, and you get a local copy of what Thomas had in his branch. Then you edit the files, verify that everything is to your expectations, commit and push to your branch, and create a pull request. And if it's all good, then we'll just merge it and it becomes part of the official website. That's, again, it's no different, not even by a millimeter, from what people do in software. It's just a very basic workflow here. The useful features is that, again, which is makes it superior to many other solutions, is that sophisticated version control and audit trail. We can always determine who did what change. It'll become more important as we get to the physics and important simulation effort to actually ascertain the provenance of plots and numbers and everything else. It is very hard to do on the wiki on Drupal, and now we have complete control of the information flow. Also, GitHub has the quote issue mechanism, which is if you never used it, it's similar to tickets. If somebody has a concern about your content, they can post a message for you on a bulletin board and this issue will be addressed and resolved, hopefully. So again, this makes it a very suitable and professional quality robust tool for development. Now, I would like to make a quick stop here. And does anyone have questions so far? Okay, so we can move on. It's almost I'm almost done with the presentation actually for today. But to move forward is this: by design, our website will have two sections. One is open to the world, which everyone can literally in the world can see, and the other one, which is for the collaboration, which is protected because you know it contains some sensitive technical or scientific data. Implementation of how we control access is deferred until we deploy here at BNL. We'll probably use some kind of industry standard SSO, just like we do in other systems. So you'll have your federated credentials, you log in and you can access the pages, and it's close to everyone else who doesn't have business looking into our stuff. So essentially, just to give an example, that's a working page right now here. That is located in essentially in a in the protected area of the website. I just ported this content from the wiki. This is, gives you an idea that essentially there's nothing fancy about it. The table of content works, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay, now I want to touch upon the issue of documents. When you start developing your material, some simulation or any other activity is documented often in PDF files or maybe some other files, which sometimes can be pretty sizable. They can, you know, be multiple megabytes. It is not a good practice to add, even though it's possible technically, to add these files to this repository because it leads to bloat. GitHub has history of everything. Even if the file is deleted later, it still lingers on the disk. And obviously it doesn't scale. I'm saying from experience that I was trying to store all the PhD thesis in Phoenix on the website, and it's much faster than I expected. It really took up so much space, it became unwieldy. So we're very close to finding a document management solution in EPIC, which is the NVENIO RDM, and Peter Steinberg, I think, is working actively on that. Until then, essentially, we have a choice of Google Drive and Dropbox and everything else. So again, if you can help it, don't put any large or medium-sized files on the website. Exception, which is very reasonable, is, of course, if we need to include a plot, the PNG plots of, you know, whatever may be relevant, Jan simulation, your projected cross-section or whatever, this is good. I mean, you can definitely put it here. You know, you can address me. I can help you direct to where it's the best way to store it and link it, so you can have a nice-looking page with graphics and stuff. So advanced topics. Essentially, what this makes this platform powerful, even without using the actual database, you can have similar capability. And I'll explain it in the next slide. You can have a structured way of describing your data in YAML, which is essentially dictionaries. And this can be anything. This can be science-related data, publication data, people data. And then it gets rendered into actual web pages. Again, YAML is very human readable. If you want to, you can have complex join-like capability like in the database. And I do it on a few websites that I design. It's not difficult to do. To give you a very simple example, that's what we do in Phoenix. We have a list of conferences where materials from that experiment were presented. And again, it's very human readable. You don't have to write any HTML. You just list the conferences and the links. And when you run Jekyll, you get what you see on the right-hand side of the screen, right? It's a decent looking web page, and everything is stored in one place. You can actually make a selection and display the same data rendered differently elsewhere. So okay. Deployment.
Maxime, can I ask, the left side is essentially what is almost part of a database for example, for the publication committee, right?
Correct. This is very useful. I mean, the format is completely up to you.
They have to keep that, and then once in a while, what, they regenerate the whole thing, or they just update the new one? How is this going to work?
Oh, the actual rendered website, it is generated pretty much every time you make a change in this. So it's always up to date. Every time you run Jekyll, the what you see on the website is it reflects what's in the data file. On various websites, including EICUG, we're using multiple data files for conferences, presentations, whatever. And again, the power is that it does have a fixed schema. You can design it in any way you want. You can add any attributes of your liking. You can select on them. So you can have a single file, but then select only slides, only plots, or only conferences with a particular keyword. It's all very doable. It's not difficult. So again, to specifically answer your question is, I'm sorry, I got distracted. Essentially, it gets rebuilt every time that you commit an edit.
Over the years, that can become very large, right? If one can divide this up then into years, and then you have kind of like an archive link where you say, see talks from 23 to 24.
Right. I mean, as long as it's just a text file, the size is not really a concern. I'm only concerned about PDF files. I mean, even if we have like a thousand conferences here, the file is still going to be very small. Or even if we have 1,000 publications, it's still very manageable. We in Phoenix have like 120 conferences and the file is still very tiny. So navigating may be an issue, but you know, there's search capability in your editor, hopefully, so you'll never get lost. And just for my own convenience, as you can see in this, I'm grouping the conferences by the year here. And so it's not really difficult to locate the particular year that you want.
Well, when it comes to actual publications, I guess there needs to be a link with Invenio if we do really the publication storage on Invenio. And there probably needs to be also kind of a handshake with HepData or something like that, right?
Right on. And it's all very doable. There's just one example. I have many more examples. You can add any sort of links in this case, like if this publication, of course, that's exactly what you do. I can actually, you know what, why not do that now? Archive Phoenix. So for example, you see these tags for it. This is pointing to the Zenodo instance at CERN. So this is a Phoenix page. Links are located again in a YAM file, but when you press on it, you get directed to the actual document. So your intuition was correct. That's how we do it. You store links in the YAML file, which points to the actual useful materials here. Right, so. Yeah, so let me find where I was. I was here. So again, there is a lot of flexibility in what links and how you put into YAML and then gets rendered into hopefully useful pages. So again, for now, we're just using the free service that GitHub provides, which is hosting and automatic rendering of our, you know, material. So we reside on GitHub pages. This is a temporary situation until we reach a level of maturity that warrants a proper deployment on a server that's located in one of the labs which participate in EPIC. At this point, we'll have to resolve authentication and authorization issues, which will be done. And but deployment itself, again, which is the advantage of this, is very simple. You literally just copy one folder to another and your website is live. And that's been happening for years now in Phoenix, which is good news. So finally, this is my last slide for today. We will be using Git and GitHub for this team effort, which is a well-established tool, of course. Getting comfortable with GitHub is a prerequisite, but you'd have to do it anyway to remain productive in EPIC, so it's not an extra hurdle for anyone. Installing and running Jekyll is an exercise that requires a few minutes of your time. It's immensely doable, and there is plenty of instructions. I'm also available to help. And so in closing, let me say that if you just start playing with content on the page assigned to you, experiment, provide feedback, and ask for help, we can start moving forward, I believe. Thank you.
Hi, Maxime, maybe it is useful, I don't know what the others think, if you can just go through one cycle, share your screen, go to GitHub, open a page, change whatever, a period or a blank, and then display this page. I don't know what the others think, but I thought that would be helpful. I saw that Ernst has his hand up.
Yeah, Ernst?
I do indeed. So yes, Thomas, I think that would be useful. But I actually wanted to ask two different questions at this point, Maxime. So you commented that let's say storing materials directly on the website doesn't scale. I agree with that. I mean, that always goes wrong in the end. And it's also linking systems that are basically built for different purposes quite often. So at the same time, if I understood your comment correctly, what you indicated is like, let's use something that is essentially a free-for-all at the moment until a better solution is in place, right? And now I forget what it was, but Peter was working on it. I can look it up. Is that how we want to go forward at the moment?
Yes.
And
I was actually in the SDCC liaison meeting yesterday. And again, I don't manage this particular effort. But by that, I mean, it's Peter who's interacting with people at SDCC. But the encouraging news is that it's pretty much deployed, and I will find out, because like I said, it's very recent, just yesterday. Invenio RDM is now available for Epic, so we need.
Okay.
So it's not in distant future. That's the good news.
That is exactly why I asked.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's one question. The second question I have with it is that almost by construction, part of the Epic website would be, how to say it, let me call it protected,
sure,
in one form or the other, and another part would be completely open. And maybe I'm just too slow or not having enough coffee at the moment yet. It was not clear for me to me from what you presented how that would work in the end. I mean, I get the point where people edit and such, but for some reason, I do think that you need some level of access permissions already now, even with something that is, let's say, semi-publicly hosted.
Can I answer this?
Yeah, of course.
Yes. And we had, of course, talks with SDCC. And I think right now the idea is that the public part, of course, will be public as Azure. And then there is this for the collaborators. And that part would go to a federated login, which not only checks that you have, of course, a federated ID, but it also goes through an additional system very similar to what we did with the phone book, which will limit the access to the internal website, to those which are listed somewhere. And that list is probably the member list, I assume.
So that's a question, Thomas. Yeah. So this I take as one level of, authentication. So it's almost a one for all, right? But then the next question could be about, like what we do on Indico, let's say, that there are protected categories that are more restrictive.
Yeah, I think that was in the requirements. At that point, I heard from SDCC that this is not an issue. But this is part, certainly, of the discussion when we talk to them to deploy it. I don't know if, Maxim, you want to add something to this.
You know, SDCC is acutely aware of the need to make a reasonable authentication authorization system in place. I think Thomas mentioned Indico. We'll have something similar. On a technical level, from my perspective, if you know, you can actually protect the folder on the web server by putting all sorts of syntax in the server configuration. SDCC will inform us and we'll essentially ask them to help us with that. So I'll leave it to the professionals. What's on us is to, let me just disconnect this. what's on us is to develop the content, and then we rely on the infrastructure people to provide the, you know, sensible single sign-on federated way of accessing information.
Great, that helped a lot. I'm very glad that this, let me call it free-for-all, will not stay too long, because that actually also does not scale.
Yeah.
In my experience.
Right. So,
can I just make one more correction? I know that we have Invenio RDM almost an instance working, but there are also talks with SDCC. And I think there was other proposals which might have to be looked at. But none of this is on a too long time scale. But at least we have, you know, I think it's right. We have something. John, he's here. There are also issues which he wanted to address with the DOE, where this database is located at the end. But this should not, you know, prevent us from going on with a website. And it's pretty clear that we will have a document database. We are very close with this instance, but you know, there are other forces at work, which we have to see how this all works out.
Yeah, let me just say, I completely agree, Thomas. There are, if you try to build everything, we're going to always find some reason to stop. The document database stuff is proceeding and will hopefully be resolved soon. So that, in some sense, that's a side issue to making progress on getting as much of the rest of the website set up as we possibly can.
It's a side issue. So first off, I mean, my comment was certainly not aimed at trying to put a stick in the wheel or something like that. Right? Quite the contrary. It's a side issue as long as we're sure that we're not painting ourselves in a corner.
No,
I've seen a number of exercises where you basically end up doing double work, and that we should not do.
I completely understood the spirit and tone of your comment, Ernst, and I agree, and I don't think we're doing that here.
Great.
Rene has hand up.
Yeah, I just had a technical question. If I have my branch ready, how do I issue a pull request so that you can put it into the main?
You'll find it. I don't remember by heart, but I'm doing it obviously for my own development in other projects. If you look at the branch, well, you know what? Let me take a look now. Where do I stand with actually even here? So I'll share the screen if needed. Okay, so if you just let me share the screen again, it's just easier. Share screen. Okay, do you see it now?
Yep.
Okay, you see, this is the repo, and then there is this menu item which is called pull requests. And then this is this green button that says new pull request. If you press on it, it'll give you a chance to define which pull request you want. So if your base is main, I can choose Thomas, for example. You know, I'm not going to go through these motions here, but essentially the interface is located under pull requests.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I mentioned that it's a good practice once the pull request is merged, the branch is completely gone, so as to not be confusing. I mean, it's not a big deal, but I found it very useful if it doesn't linger. And then you can create a new branch of the updated main and keep going forward, you know, in perpetuity, effectively.
Okay.
So this is it, and like I said, I'll do my best to answer questions by email. If need be, people can do Zoom call with me or Thomas. John has hand up.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. So I want to make sure that I understand the preferred way to work with things here. I mean, you're totally happy with us checking out a copy of the website from GitHub, making changes and submitting a pull request, right? Because the previous emails from Thomas, I think, tried to make things simpler by saying, put it in a document and we'll take care of it. But you're totally happy with us working directly with the website.
No, directly with the website, we modulate the suggestion that you use branches, which is not a big deal. You do a
right.
Branch, check out branch, and that's the standard way, which I like personally, right? It's pretty much error-proof if you do it correctly. I like that.
Yeah, so, John, just to comment on this, my idea was at the beginning that it is also always easier to have something in place than starting from scratch. So at that point, I had simply asked Maxime to take the input from you guys, build the website, take also copy stuff from the wiki over. And I think now we have a pretty okay kind of, you know, skeleton of everything. I think most of the pages have some content. But to take this further, this would touch, you know, just be too complicated to go through Maxime. And that's why we go now this way. You can edit it yourself. You check out the page, you modify it, you write your whatever spokesman statement, and you upload it, and that's the end of it. And then at some point, we have to see how we proceed and then at some point publish the website.
Totally perfect. I'm absolutely on board with that, and I promise I will try to do my homework this weekend.
Yeah, I'll pick up as well at this point. So I think this is all very good.
So I know we said half an hour. Maxine, you still want to go for 5 minutes quickly through one cycle?
Oh, I have time, of course. I mean, the idea is to get results after this meeting. So
just show people, you know, go to GitHub, check out the file, edit it, put it back.
No. Thomas, that's not a good idea, because you just told me yesterday GitHub Actions can take minutes to complete now.
Okay, good, fine.
So it's essentially, so what does happen, but I'm glad you mentioned that. For people who are not very familiar with GitHub, the way it works, when you push content and it, for example, it gets merged, you trigger so-called action on GitHub, which is exactly the conversion of the repository content into the website. And GitHub can be flaky in the sense that it doesn't do it in a millisecond. It can take like 5 minutes, and we don't want to wait for that.
Maybe, Maxime, at some point what we could do is record among ourselves one of these cycles, how to do it, and then via Zoom record that, and then just put that up so people can, you know, kind of like a YouTube
intro. I'll actually look into recording this directly into YouTube. Zoom is not necessary.
I mean something specific really to our website.
Sure, absolutely. That's what I meant. We had a very good experience in EICUG with recording software tutorials and all that. So it's not a totally new.
Maxime, I have one question. I mean, for example, you know, there are, of course, the front pages, especially of the public site, that has to have some very compelling, probably animation or God knows what. And we have people in the collaboration, you know, especially some, you know, of these early career members who are very eager on doing these things. But the problem is, you said once that there is a limit for the development on GitHub, how much you can put there, because they are very sensitive to too many pictures, right? How is this going to work? How do we do that?
Well, hosting videos on GitHub is not a good idea. So we'll have to find a way to host it elsewhere and put a live link. I don't have like a ready solution off the top of my head right now.
Yeah. So we do have a YouTube account, which is where we post, for example, all the recordings from the TIC meetings and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
So we can use that.
Okay.
Over the past years, GitHub has been getting more conservative and also profit-oriented. They started with a very large allotment for any given repo. I forget, it was 5 gigabytes or something of that nature. It was huge. Now they're basically down to 100 megabytes and now basically to 50. I mean, actually, it's still probably 100. But what I'm trying to say, videos are heavy for almost any platform. And like John said, we should try to use YouTube and whatever. But like I said, any diagrams, etc., perfectly okay. What is also true, Thomas, is that because it's all template based, we can eventually again ask the creative division at BNL or elsewhere for help to polish it and make it more graphically pleasing. That is again the advantage, that the content that our team members are developing is unrelated to the way the website is. We can provide any scheme you want going forward.
That was always the idea, but I thought it would be good to have a mature website, and then I can chat with Gary if he kind of can have a look and suggest things.
So in terms of timeline, I mean, I'm not sure if you want to set any milestones, but hopefully, if I was to make a wild guess, within the next 3 months, it would be nice to have enough content to say, okay, we have a site now, and let's think about deployment and making it a permanent fixture. What do you think?
Yeah, that's
Thomas, I saw that you put the indigo for this meeting into the chat. Can you also send that around by email one more time?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was there, but I couldn't find it. That's why I just put that there.
It's, yeah, I think that's the first time I saw it. So I don't think it was around, sent around before.
Yeah, of course, Thomas, and probably I also will send a link. It also can be located under the Epic category. I created a subcategory called collaborative tools for this, because, you know, we'll have more than one meeting and it's convenient to have things in place. But it's also discoverable just from the Indico Epic category. Of course, we'll send a link no matter what.
I'm typing as we go.
So I just wanted to say, Maxime, that during the discussion here and while following through your slides, I created a branch. I've checked it out. I installed Jekyll and I can serve it locally.
So, wow, that's fantastic. That's good news. And thank you for doing that.
What you can tell people when they complain is that if the dumbass spokesperson can do it, then they can do it. So.
Well, that's good news. Thank you, John. I mean, the minor hiccups I encountered, I've been using this platform for 5 years now on a daily basis, pretty much. But minor hiccups is that some Ruby gem, this is all written in Ruby, which you don't need to know at all. It requires zero knowledge of Ruby. However, for certain fancier stuff, it requires so-called gems. And in my previous installations, I had to use that. But now it's all contained in the repo. So for most of our team members, everything is just transparent, hopefully. It just works out of the box, and that's the idea. And if it doesn't, just let me know.
Yeah, so far so good. So now I've got absolutely no excuse for not doing my...
I can also, for those on a Mac, I for example, I'm using something which is very convenient, which is called MacDown. You can download it. It is a dual editor. On the left side, you have your Mac, your markup language, and on the right side, you see how the website would look like. And then, you know, I play with that locally, and then you can upload it to GitHub, you know, and pull that through. But this is a Mac alternative, which is not bad. It's also free. I think Jekyll is also, of course, free. No problem. Okay, I think we are done.
Well, great. Thank you so much. Anything else? No, we'll need to think about, first of all, reaching out to people who couldn't make it today. This is obviously available. I'll have a busy month ahead of me, but, you know, we'll do my best to be available.
On and email. We have the recording. I will put it up also on the Indicon website. So
fantastic. Yeah, that's good. That's great.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. And we see us in whatever. 45 minutes. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Very good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.